44. The faceless men slammed into Eli. The clown and the gaunt one grabbed his arms and yanked him away from the sandstone plinth. Eli struggled, but it was like fighting statues. The chamber spun, a whirlwind of marble and flags. He caught a glimpse of two other faceless men lifting Harry as she kicked and fought. His feet stumbled as they dragged him away. The brightness of the marble antechamber made him squint. The doors of the rotunda swung shut and closed. A click echoed from the restored keyhole. They hauled him back, and Eli's stomach lurched as he began to drop. They'd thrown him out onto the staircase, he realized, to break countless bones as he tumbled and crashed down 40 feet worth of marble steps. He wondered if the fall would kill him. But they held on, dragging him backward as they charged down the stairs with an eerie metronomic speed and precision. The marble room rushed away, and the heavy curtains closed across the staircase. They held him facing the archway, but the sounds of motion and typing and muffled conversations reached his ears. The two faceless men released Eli's arms and stepped away. After the whirlwind trip away from the dream and down the stairs, the lack of support left him swaying. He shuffled his feet into better positions and looked around. Harry stood a few yards away, favoring her bad leg, flanked by her own pair of faceless men. She brushed her hair out of her face and shook her coat back into position. Her eyes met Eli's and mirrored his own confusion. The clown dipped his head and held out Eli's derby. A faceless man with an expressionless mask presented Harry's tricorn. 15 stood before the curtain. He strode forward between Eli and Harry. The sounds of business and work faded to silence.
"The dream has been restored," he boomed to the chamber.
His voice echoed across the massive room. Applause broke out. Some of the faceless men cheered, the sounds muffled by flesh and distance. It reminded Eli of old newsreels, of polite, contained expressions of joy. The noise level settled back to normal, although the chamber seemed brighter, more energetic, unburdened.
"All remaining agents in the field should be recalled," said the gaunt, faceless man with the fox mask.
"Agreed," said 15. "At this point, all efforts should be put toward relocation."
Eli glanced at Harry. Relocation? 15's blank face turned to aim at Eli.
"The security of the dream has been compromised."
Harry shook her head.
"No," she said, "it hasn't. Eli's correct. It's never left your care."
"Security has been compromised," said 15, extending a finger, "by the two of you."
Something rolled over in Eli's gut. Harry's hands settled low at her sides, right by the holsters holding her empty pistols. Her eyes flicked from side to side, watching the faceless men around them.
"The dream will be moved," the faceless man continued, "because its location and the location of the office have been confirmed by outside parties. This action follows all existing protocols."
Eli blinked. "What's that mean?"
"The Founding Fathers were very thorough," said 15. "Contingencies exist for almost every situation, including a compromised location."
His blank face swung back and forth, pointing at each of them.
"The dream will be moved, and the office of the faceless men with it. This time tomorrow, the Founder's house will just be an abandoned hotel near the center of Sanders. This will have some effects on your hometown, Mr. Teague. Most noticeably..."
"What happens to us?"
said Harry, her fingers flexed reflexively by the holsters. For a man with no face, Eli thought 15 did an amazing job of looking confused.
"What do you mean?"
"You said we've compromised the security of the dream."
"You did,"
agreed 15. The empty sockets of his mask turned to Eli.
"You've seen the dream. Touched it, even. You both now know where it's located within our base of operations, and where our base is. This is why we need to relocate."
Eli and Harry waited.
"And?"
she asked.
"And nothing," said 15. "Per Mr. Teague's request, there will be no punishment."
Eli counted 3 heartbeats.
"So, you're just letting us go?"
"Correct,"
said 15.
He gestured down an aisle of desks and file cabinets.
This way, please.
15 marched forward. Eli and Harry followed, her arm draped across his shoulders. Two faceless men fell into step on either side of them, with two more shoulder to shoulder behind them. It felt like a Secret Service kind of formation, the way a president would be guided through a crowd. Harry cleared her throat.
What about Eleanor?
15 turned his head to her without slowing.
Who?
The car, Eli said. Our car.
The 1929 Model A business coupe, said 15 with a nod. It's currently a dislocated object in 1898. It will be retrieved and restored to any appropriate era you wish.
Thank you,
said Harry. Their group moved smoothly through the swarm of faceless men, passing maps and desks and card catalogs. They turned once beneath one of the massive chandeliers, marched down a second aisle, and came to a wide set of double doors. The formation shifted around Eli and Harry as a faceless man on either side stepped forward to hold them open so 15 never broke pace. The hallway beyond looked like a hospital basement with pale green floors and stripes on the walls. Their footsteps echoed against the concrete. It reminded Eli of his recent injuries.
What about Zeke and his hornet? He asked. What'll happen to them?
As you've no doubt realized, Mr. Teague, said 15, half turning his head to his shoulder, the Hudson Hornet will remain where it crashed. It is dislocated, but the nature of Sanders should prevent it from causing any damage to the timeline.
And Zeke?
Zero will be repaired and go through rehabilitation. It's my own fault for rushing him into the field. Adjusting to the nature of being a faceless man is overwhelming for some people. More so if they are an anomaly. We'll repair his wounds and his mind. The faceless men have always taken care of our own.
Will it work? Eli asked. Will you really be able to help him?
It took several years,
said the clown, walking at Eli's shoulder.
But eventually I was able to resume my duties and responsibilities. Thank you for your concern.
Eli stared at the sockets above the plastic smile, at the shape of the skull behind the mask.
Zeke?
I am currently known as 33, Mr. Teague.
Are you okay?
I have health, certainty, and purpose. I am one of the faceless men, and always have been.
That's good.
33 gave a polite nod. They came to a single door with a large glass window. Sunlight fell through it to make a bright square on the concrete floor. 15 stopped with his toes just on the edge of the light. In the distance, Eli could see buildings, an open space, and what looked like some kind of snow-covered scaffolding. Then the images lined up in his mind, and he realized he was seeing the baseball field bleachers from behind. They were looking out one of the back doors of the founder's house.
You're free to go, said 15. You may also continue using the dream's effects to travel through our country's history.
Harry's brows went up.
Really?
It's a natural consequence of the dream's existence. It isn't our place to restrict it. We will, however, continue to monitor for disruptions to the timeline of the United States. Any serious incidents will be dealt with. Harshly.
I understand, she said.
Excellent, said the faceless man. Please pass word of this along to your fellow searchers.
33 stepped around his superior and opened the door. The sunlight shifted angles. Cold air rolled into the hall. Off in the distance, a car engine chugged away, a very modern engine to Eli's ear. Eli turned to Harry. A few loose strands of blonde hair swung free from her tricorn and caught the sun.
Shall we?
He said.
Yes, she said. Yes, I think we shall.
15 reached out and set a hand on Harry's shoulder.
Not you, Mrs. Pritchard.
Her arm stiffened across Eli's shoulders. His tightened on her waist.
Why not? You told us we were free to leave, she said.
And you are, said 15. You were promised freedom, but not freedom together. Mr. Teague must be returned. He'll be the only one leaving this way.
Eli and Harry looked at each other. Returned? Where?
To Sanders, the faceless man said, gesturing at the door. Your town is an anomaly. You are part of the town. It needs to be as complete as possible when it catches up with the rest of the country.
What?
Your town will be freed of the dream's influence. Its progress will no longer be slowed. I'd expect the first few weeks to be startling. You can also be an active agent there, helping to smooth over any confusion or suspicion that may arise.
He's my partner, said Harry.
15 nodded.
And most likely will be again, eventually.
Eli frowned. How long is that?
As long as it takes for new connections to establish between Sanders and history. Weeks, months perhaps, no more than a few years.
A few years? They both said at once.
I wish I could be more exact. Nothing like this has ever happened before, or will ever happen again. It's a unique moment in American history. As I said before, Sanders is one of the most important places in the country.
Eli and Harry looked at each other. Her grip on his shoulders loosened.
What if,
Eli began.
There's no way around it,
15 told them.
Once you leave, Mr. Teague, relocation will cut off the town. There will be no more of the slick spots, as you like to call them. Not here, at least. The only way to travel in and out of Sanders will be the same way everyone else does.
He gestured at the door. Eli looked at Harry, the door, back to Harry.
Thanks, I guess.
Thanks?
For saving my life half a dozen times? And not dumping me on the side of the road somewhere? Thanks for convincing me to finally get out of my town.
You did that on your own,
she said.
Even if it was for very stupid reasons.
He chuckled.
Yeah, I guess they were.
She wrapped her arms around him and squeezed. She was a good height to hug. They fit well in each other's arms.
Thank you for everything.
I guess I'll see you sometime, maybe.
She glanced at 15.
Eventually,
she said. She took a few limping steps back.
I'll find you again. I promise.
I'll be waiting.